I'm Sonia Morton Firth, and you're watching The Sonia Morton Firth Show. Today, my guest is AJ Roberts. AJ is a 15-year British Forces veteran, high-performance coach, speaker, and podcast host. He also raises money and has done volunteer work for amputees and war victims in Sierra Leone. AJ's dreams were crushed when injuries prevented him from becoming a professional footballer, and this downward slope nearly sent him to jail. Now AJ is addicted to helping and developing people. AJ, thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
Absolute pleasure to be here. I'm really excited.
And do you know what? It's really strange, actually, because you're usually the interviewer and I'm interviewing someone that has their own podcast. And when I was reading up about you, I was almost like, my God, is this guy like a male version of me? Tell me a little bit about your podcast and what you're doing.
Yeah, so it's kind of very similar to like what you've got going on, where you like to get inspirational guests to share their story, and that gives you the opportunity then to get their message out there and hopefully inspire others to, you know, to be better versions of themselves. And that's what my podcast is called, The Best Version of You. I love to interview what I like to call ordinary people doing extraordinary things.
Why do you want to do that? What inspired you to do this?
I love working with people. I love people. Over the years, I've often been told that I don't shut up and I'm always talking. I'll talk to anybody, like, and I do. I've got a huge passion for people and developing other people as well as myself. You know, so if I can develop myself, I can help develop other people along the way. And that's where, like, you know, I've always been coaching in some capacity because I just love that raw like emotion you get from seeing like the positive influence that you've had on somebody as they develop from, you know, from here to here. And I think people are like the best investment you can ever have and make.
And you weren't always a coach or in a podcast. Tell me before where you were. You served in the army for, was it 15 years?
Yeah. So I joined the Royal Engineers in 2001. I wouldn't say it was really a choice. I wasn't the nicest of people, let's say.
What do you mean you weren't the nicest of people?
I got mixed in with the wrong crowd. I was destined to be a professional football player. Yeah. I got signed on the youth training scheme by AFC Bournemouth, who obviously are now in the Premier League. They were in League One at the time, and I was probably about 6 months away from signing a pro contract. Unfortunately, I got injured having a kickabout on a Sunday night for my cousin's team. I clashed knees with this guy, and I severed a perineal nerve across just below your knee, and it stopped me from feeling things in my foot properly for about sort of 2 to 3 months. And obviously, during that period, obviously I couldn't run properly. I couldn't do the things that you know, quick, sharp reactions that you need and the agility that you need, you know, to perform at that level in professional football. And then the club being where it was at, they weren't like cash rich or anything like that then. I mean, they almost went bust at one point. They decided to let me go.
So basically your knee injury stopped your professional, potentially, going on to become a professional footballer.
Mm. Yeah, and it was a really hard pill to swallow, and that's what led me down this downward spiral. So I started drinking a lot. I ended up getting involved with drugs, cocaine and stuff like that, and then which led me to get involved with the wrong crowds. I was then involved with like low-level crime, got a bit greedy, and me and this group of lads got arrested, and I basically was in the docks, and it was actually the day before I got arrested. I'd actually gone and inquired about joining the British Army because I was kind of in a place where I was like, you know, I'm not really going anywhere doing anything. And it was always in the back of my mind because my stepdad was in the military and I'd grown up in Germany and seen it all firsthand anyway. I'd actually walked into the careers office, inquired all about it, and then the next day I got nicked.
Wow, it's almost like a film, isn't it? It's like you're walking up to the the office, and
it was actually so when I was in the docks, so the two lads that other lads I got sent got arrested with, they got sent down, and I didn't get sent down. It was only because I said it, and the lawyer said I was joining the forces. The judge said, you join the forces or you're going down with them.
So, tell me about your trip to Sierra Leone, because this is your charity work that you've been doing. Mm. How did that start?
It all started with my friend from America going over there with a lady called Faith, who runs the charity called Melkosh Mission International. And I seen her post on social media, and it was her helping a lot of amputees and rape victims and orphan war orphans from the Civil War there. So it was a really bad Civil War, and you might have seen films like Blood Diamonds and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
yes.
Kind of paints a picture of like what it was like. The best way to describe it is if Stephen King was trying to direct the most barbaric movie you can imagine. He could literally base it on some of the atrocities that happened there in that Civil War. So,
that makes me like shudder.
So in a nutshell, the president at the time was saying to the country, you know, you've got the whole future of this country in your hands, because they're trying to get as many people as they can to mine diamonds, which would then boost the economy in the country. The uprising then started from like the West Side Boys and stuff like that. And they thought the best way to stop people mining diamonds for the government was to go around chopping as many people's limbs off as possible, and you know, just mutilation, barbarism. It was just horrendous. Children. So anyway, I've seen my friend Nicole's posts on social media, and I said, "That's amazing what you're doing, unbelievable." And while she was out there, Faith was saying that she'd love to get someone to come out who's got a sporting background, does some coaching, like loves the whole empowerment stuff.
Yeah.
And Nicole recommended me straight away. So they got in touch with me. I had a long conversations with Faith, and I was pretty much like, what time's the plane, when are we going?
Wow.
it was a big push before Christmas to promote everything we were doing over there and raise as much money as we could to take a lot of procured medication, because over there you'd never know what you're buying. It's the same as a lot of Africa. So we raised a good amount of money. We took over big boxes, like huge, huge boxes full of medication over there. And then we ran medical missions where amputees would travel, because there was some already living in the village. Mm. So it's actually an amputee village. So obviously people have got missing arms, missing legs, some both, you know, or maybe the odd hand. So everyone there needs some form of help, and their kids as well. And bear in mind, they're all very poor. Yeah. So, you know, they have bare minimum. What I love about it is the fact that as soon as you get to the airport, you land and you come out, like Sierra Leone is in front of you. So you've got like little shanty huts and everything like that, people trying to sell you water. It's just people trying to get by. I was very much in the thick of it straight away. And I went there with a complete blank canvas. I went there with my guard down. And I literally went into this village like a big...
Did you feel any danger, or
no,
was it?
No. And it's because I went in there completely open-minded, completely curious, and I was basically telling them, like, I am your friend, I'm here to help. And they soon got that, like that. And I kind of acted like a big kid, really. I was playing with the kids, and I wanted to because I knew that they don't have smartphones and PlayStations and Xboxes and all that kind of stuff that our kids tend to occupy themselves with nowadays. I knew it was going to be like my childhood, where you're playing with old tyres and footballs that are so flat, but you don't care. Or you make a football out of, some of them had bags of rubbish and they like taped them up, you know, to make a football. And they were kicking it around and they were even header in it, which was... which is mad. And so I went over there with loads of donated football shirts that I collected over the few months, some footballs. So my goal was to have the biggest impact possible I could have on these people and them on me. I think I 10x that. I had a brilliant impact on them and they did on me. And I come back with this, you know, even bigger gratitude for what we've got. I planned to use my social media as best I could while I was over there to show people, you know, how lucky we have it in the Western world. So I did some loads of Facebook lives, some LinkedIn lives, like stuff like that. And, you know, everyone was so taken aback by how amazing these people were. And my inbox was just flooded the whole week I was there. You know, how can I get involved? And that was the plan as well, because obviously we're going back every year now.
That's amazing. I mean, you've made a real difference.
Yeah,
and to it's people's lives.
I mean,
you're not only making a real difference to those people's lives where they really need it, but you're also making a real difference to people's lives who are listening to you on your podcast and then becoming a client through your coaching.
Yeah, it's that's kind of the goal, really, is to inspire as many people as possible. I said at the start of 2020, I want to have the biggest impact I possibly can on as many people I possibly can.
Tell me, where did your personal growth journey start?
When I was a teenager, like 15, 16, you know, going back to what I was saying before about being the oldest brother, I kind of like was very mature for my age. Obviously, you didn't have access to all the amazing information you do now, and other than books, really. I think we only just got the internet in our house when I was like in year 11 at school, so like 16. Because I was obviously pushing and focusing on being a pro footballer, obviously that's what I think, but I could see it getting nearer and nearer and nearer, and the possibilities that are happening, that's where I really honed in on personal growth. Obviously, things kind of spiraled downwards after then when I had my injury, and it was I'm joining the army that it picked all back up again. I think you haven't really got a choice to back then to try and better yourself, because you can kind of get left behind or caught out, so to speak. And you know, you don't really want to be known as like a mincer, like in the army, who just sits around and is lazy. So, you know, I've always tried to better myself. You know, anytime I was adventure training or instructor qualification courses, I was always putting my hand up, like wanting to go away. I got heavily back into boxing because I did it as a kid.
Yeah.
I got heavily back into boxing, and then I ended up fighting at a high level and had some fights for the army. And then a few nose operations later, was told that, you know, that
you can't see anything.
I was told I shouldn't fight anymore. You know, if I want to breathe properly again and be able to have full function, I need to stop. So I kind of like dwindled down on that, but I've always been very much into the personal growth. And that's when, you know, when it started following people online, because you've got that ability to be able to do so, you know, you've got the resources via whether it's social media, whether it's podcasts, or whether it's audio books and stuff. You know,
it's amazing, like the resources we've got now.
Yeah. And I fill my day with it almost every given opportunity. All most of my friends listen to music in the car. I'm like, even on the way here, podcasts, and even, you know, in the gym a lot, if I'm on my own, podcasts or audiobooks. I'm not doing that kind of training where I need like heavy metal and stuff to get that last rep out, you know.
Yeah, don't need the big motivation.
You know, all my training is very much on just being healthy and maintenance. And
what happened to your gym in Australia?
So I had a break from the army. So I come back from Afghanistan in 2012, very kinetic tour. I was a commander out there, and you know.
Did you see many atrocities?
We lost one of our guys in an IED blast, which affected our vehicle.
Did you suffer any post-traumatic stress?
I wouldn't say I suffered. I've never been diagnosed with anything. And it's, you know, going back to all the stuff with the coaching and speaking and stuff I was saying before, it's things like that that is part of the reason why I do what I do now, because it's my therapy. I know, like, from where you've had Woody on in the past, you know, he's had to overcome similar things and, you know, witnessed friends being killed and unfortunately suicides as well. Yeah. Same, you know, like myself. He uses those platforms to speak about it to the masses, and that's his therapy.
It's like a self-heal.
Yes, and it's the same for me. My best friend unfortunately committed suicide 2.5 years ago, actually on camp, totally out of the blue. And it was actually at his funeral where I did his eulogy. I think there's about 400 or 500 people there. And that's when I realized that this is what I was supposed to do. speak, because everybody's eyes were fixated on me.
Yeah.
And they were just looking for that bit of inspiration and that bit of humour to lift them up a little bit because of, you know, what was going on. You know, you could see that people hadn't sunk in that they were at, you know, Shimmer's funeral. And I sat down and afterwards my wife was just like, wow, like you were really calm. Like, did that not bother you? And I said, no. And I said, yeah, I think it was purely because, like, I could see that everyone was looking at me for that inspiration and I knew that I could give it to them. So that was like a real turning point for me in terms of like the speaking.
Mm. And well, I guess it's discovering your true purpose.
Yes. Yeah. And that's how I knew that I was meant to do this. I don't mean like stand at people's funerals.
No, no, no.
Dearly beloved. And it's kind of gone from there, really.
But helping people that could be in that situation, potentially saving them from
being there. Yeah, and so going back to obviously the thing with the gym, I'd you know, really connect tour in Afghanistan. Even as a battle group, we lost a lot of people. I was unfortunately one of the engineer call signs that had to help this vehicle that had been struck by a very large IED. And it actually killed all six soldiers on March the 6th, 2012. Me and two of my guys had to help the infantry guys finally get into the vehicle, but it took us about 10 hours. And that's because the ammunition was going off in the back from being on fire. None of the young lads were recognisable. You couldn't tell who was who. It was a really grim, scene. That will stay in my head forever. And when I got the opportunity to move to Australia with my wife and kids, because I'd been chatting to an ex Royal Engineer online, he was set up in Australia for about 16 years. He offered me a project manager job out there. After some long thought about it, because I was really green and keen, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, you know what? I've done what I wanted to do in the army. We've got an amazing opportunity here to move to the Gold Coast. Mm. So I was like, we need to take this, and we did. And I left at my 12-year point, went to Australia, and everything was going great. And the problem was the guy I worked for was cash flow poor and he kept it quiet. One thing led to another, then I wasn't getting paid properly because invoices weren't coming in. I knew something that was up, and I was like, what do I do? Because I'd just been used to this big security blanket.
Yeah,
I was on the other side of the world, literally, on the other side of the world.
Presumably, you'd never run your own business before either.
No. And I was like, what do I do? And I've been doing a lot of CrossFit coaching out there because CrossFit's huge in Australia. Like, there's literally a CrossFit gym on every corner. You literally have a CrossFit gym, paleo cafe.
I'm a bodybuilder, so it doesn't really go with my
head. Yeah. And, you know, I wasn't really into that kind of stuff, nutritionist kind of stuff anyway. But I'd been coaching a guy who was heavily into startups and stuff like that. And he spoke to me about my issue. And I was like, man, I'm going to have to leave the country. And so he said, why don't you start a business? I'll help back you. And then eventually you can change your visa over from a sponsored visa, which was what I was on, to a business visa and sponsor myself as a director. And I was like, what, no brainer, this is awesome. So we started small and it got bigger and bigger. Had a boot camp running alongside it. Made it a military theme, so it was called Coach Combat.
Okay.
So it had that point of difference from all the other CrossFit gyms. Mm. And everything was going great. We then, an investor came on board. He'd been coming to one of the boot camps. He said, you know, I'll put in $100,000 and
great.
Everything was great. But a third of the way through the investment, he decided to do a runner. Basically said he was bipolar too. Always knew he wasn't always there. Mm. But, you know, when you're in that situation, you kind of like hands are tied because you know that like you
well,
and your
you just
family,
hope, I guess. You hope it's going to come through.
Yeah, you and your family's welfare is paramount. Yeah. And because you haven't got that like immediate support network, you're literally on the other side of the world. You need to make, you know, you kind of have to make decisions sometimes and just go with the flow. And that's what we did. Because he did a runner, left us high and dry with all these huge overheads. We were like, we're going to be borrowing money forever. So I had to take it on the chin. And at that point...
And taking that on the chin, how did that feel? Because I've started my own businesses
before and it's horrible.
And failed and it's...
It was horrible.
Biggest learning curve.
And that was what, like... You know, I say it to my missus, like the business didn't fail. It was the fact that we didn't fail because we built up, like we had almost 100 members. and it was a really great place. And you know, I still speak to a lot of them now, you know, many of them, and got amazing friends there. But financially and legally, because by this point, immigration got in touch with me, said, look, you're not working for your original employer, you've got 30 days or to find a, get a sponsor or you leave the country. Mm. Couldn't find a sponsor, didn't have, we had no money.
So you had to get back, you had to come back to England.
Yeah,
basically.
We had no money to suddenly just get another visa. And that was a big turning point for me, because standing in my garage, having to sell everything I own, including all my kids' toys, and come back to UK with literally the bags on our backs.
So how did you get over that? You're in the UK, you've got your bags, and how did you turn that round? I mean, is there anything there? You know, I'm thinking of the audience as well. When you're in that point of, fuck, nothing can get worse than this.
Yeah.
But yet you've seen your friends being blown up in front of you. And you talk about the atrocities in Afghanistan. How does that compare?
I'm very, very much a big believer in thinking forward, and I'm practicing what I preach. I think there's another good reason to coach and, you know, inspire and stuff like that, is because you kind of need to practice what you preach.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, it's kind of good therapy for yourself.
Yeah, completely.
And so
sometimes it's easier said than done as well.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And I think because, you know, I've often said to people, you need to look in the front windscreen and not look in that rear view mirror. And I said it a lot to people in Sierra Leone. I said, you know, we've all been through these, some form of atrocity at some point. You know, life is not perfect and it never will be. So if you find yourself, you know, on your back, you know, like the old cliche says, the only way you can look is up. Mm. And we were literally on our backs. I mean, luckily we had support from my mum and dad, although we had to live in a pub. So we literally moved from like the Gold Coast in Australia, lovely beaches and everything like that. And then we were living at the top of a pub, constant fighting outside, swearing, everyone smoking, like, you know what I mean? It was just a huge culture shock for my kids, especially. Mm. They found it really hard on my wife. Mm. So I rejoined the army because they were really dying for rejoiners. And it was a good opportunity to get us back on our feet, you know, get a roof over our heads, get a, you know, consistent wage coming in. So yeah, January 2016, I rejoined. And I was in for a couple of years. So it was good. It served, again, it was back to what I knew. It was back around.
And if you could change anything, would you change it?
No, not at all.
So in the next 5 years, where do you see yourself? What do you want to be doing in the next 5 years?
Well, I don't think I'm going to age at all.
No, you're never going to age. Absolutely not. Not with your positive mindset and all your training.
Yeah, I've told myself that. That's not going to happen. Yeah. But I'd like the podcast to be in a really good place and very, very well known. And again, that's not just for an ego point of view. It's purely because the more people it can reach, you know, the more people will be inspired.
Of course, you're getting that message out and shining a light.
I'd like the work I'm doing with Melkosh Mission to be like really prolific. So similar to Jordan Wiley, we've got a school that's half built, as in the shell of the buildings there. So this year we want to get that finished. But
how much more do you need? What do you need in terms of sponsorship?
Oh, it's like £15,000, and that's to do everything. And that's what we're trying to get construction companies involved that, you know, want to make a difference, or building companies. Mm. But we don't want to just do it for that village. We want to have schools like that for all the little villages where the amputees live, because it's kind of like an epicenter to everything. So as soon as the schools are sorted, the kids are not taking up like chicken coops and stuff, which is what's being used at the minute to teach the children, and the elders can have their businesses back, because then they can have their chickens back to farm eggs and stuff like that, because that's how they made the money. So it has a huge positive knock-on effect, as well as getting kids educated, because education over there is power. It really is. Like, I've never been around a demographic in my life of so many people who are so determined to be educated and become better. It's amazing. And it's because they're so humble and the gratitude levels are just up here.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's fantastic that you're making a difference as well there.
Yeah, and I just love it. And, you know, it's that feeling you get from seeing the impact you're having. And I'd also like to be at a really good level of popular events for people to attend to. So I'm working on my first ever event that I want to hold.
Well, tell me about your event.
So it's going to be the best version of you event.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really trying to hammer home that saying.
Yes.
For people to, you know, tell themselves or ask themselves. And I want to really gear it around positive mental health,
yes.
physical health as well, and the importance of it. Although, you know, I believe fitness and nutrition are only a small part, really, of the best life. You know, the foundations are really about that mindset. So it's, you know, getting some really good speakers there that focus a lot on this. You know, loads of veterans, people who might be anyone who's struggling mentally or just want that bit of a boost. And because I go to a lot of events myself, I often feel that you know, there's that little niche is just missing. I think maybe because it's a bit of a taboo subject, you know, people don't want, who've not got much experience in atrocities or work with people like that, you know, don't really want to dive into it. But I think, you know, I've got the credentials and I've got the people in my circle that are doing amazing things in the veteran community that would love, you know, want to get involved. Yeah. And I know for a fact
there's a few people I might know that can help you as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, that again, it's an amazing opportunity for networking.
Yeah, it's about collaboration.
Like the events I go to, I don't even remember half the content I listen to, but I remember all the people I meet. Yeah. And that's just the same for a lot of the people that go there. Yeah. So I'm going to like Expert Empires next week in London. Nick James and Ed Milet's talking. I'm a huge fan of. So yeah, I like some events to be at a really good level. Again, just an amazing opportunity to have a huge mass of people, hopefully helped and inspired, you know, they can go on and you know, and make a difference in other people's lives.
And AJ, come to my last question. If you had to write a message in a bottle for future generations to find, what would that message be?
I'll 100% be your authentic self.
I love it.
The more you are your authentic self, the better life you'll have. Like, because, you know, we see it all the time now, and it's the big thing that I talk about in talks to teenagers and stuff like that is so many people are comparing themselves to other people's filtered lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got to stop comparing.
And it's having a real negative effect on their own mental health and the way they lead their own lives.
That's great. AJ, thank you so much for being a guest on my show. Thank you. Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, there's a new interview out every Monday, so hit subscribe and like, and you'll get it straight into your inbox.